Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. In the next half hour, we will be talking about an iconic Iowa bird known as the trumpeter swan. And joining me today is Kevin Dreese, Director of Animal Care and Conservation at Blank Park Zoo. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
So when we talk about trumpeter swans, there's not very many in Iowa right now, but that wasn't always the case. Could you tell us a little bit about the history?
That's true. Prior to European settlement, there were trumpeter swans all across the state of Iowa. But due to Iowa's great soil for growing crops, a lot of wetlands were drained, and there was uncontrolled hunting when the state was first settled. And so actually the loss of habitat and uncontrolled hunting, why the last trumpeter swan was seen in Iowa in 1883. And it remained that way with not a single swan in Iowa for 100 years. In 1930, there was only 69 birds left in the continental United States, and they were all out in a wildlife refuge in Montana. But here in the upper Midwest, they decided to do a trumpeter swan restoration project, not just to return the swan to the upper Midwest, but also to use them as an example of why wetlands are important, not only for flood control, but also soil maintenance, as well as wetlands acting as filters for all of our drinking water.
And so they were once a threatened species, extinct. Is the term expatriated, right?
Extirpated from the state of Iowa, yeah.
How's that changed since the 1930s?
Okay. Well, so it finally changed in 1998 when the first wild swan pair nested in Iowa again. So they were gone from 1883 to 1998. And basically, out of those 69 birds, there were still swans up in Alaska. And so Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois all started to reintroduce swans about the same time. Wisconsin, in particular, helped lead the charge. And they started to use swans hatched in captivity at zoos, at private people, and they would release them in these different states. And slowly but surely, swans started to come back and started to nest in the wild. And initially, they would neck collar swans, put a plastic collar on their neck so that the number could be seen from a distance, and they monitored where the swans would go and what they would do. And actually, the plan included having 15 wild nesting pairs in Iowa, and we've exceeded that number. There are now close to between 20 and 30 wild nesting pairs of swans in Iowa. In fact, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources has sort of given a lot of the management of this restoration project to the counties. But the Blank Park Zoo has been a part of this restoration project almost from the very beginning.
So, yeah, tell us about Blank Park Zoo's involvement with trumpeter swans.
Okay, well, when the Blank Park Zoo first opened in 1986, when it reopened then, we had a pair of mute swans, which are oftentimes a species of swan kept in captivity, but not native to North America. They're they're zoo birds, swan displays. And we learned about the restoration project the Iowa DNR was going to do, and so we switched species at the zoo. We switched from the mute swan to the trumpeter swan. And it took us a little while to get a bonded pair. That's one thing about swans. Once they do bond, they tend to stay bonded together. We got our first pair together, and actually the female swan was named Ivana. And she's actually still at the zoo today, and she's probably about 23 years old, and she's produced over 55 cygnets, this is what a baby swan is called, in her lifetime here at the zoo, and over 25 of those have been released into the wild and have been part of this restoration project.
And you were just part of a release of trumpeter swans into a wetland not far from here. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. The Iowa DNR sometimes for public events, so they will have invite people and school children to come and see the release of trumpeter swans. Now, the release of trumpeter swan, it's not like it flies off into the air. Basically, they have young birds that they want to home in and call a certain area. You know, they want them to be their home base for a while. So usually they'll clip the feathers on one side so they can't fly off. And then when they remolt later that summer, then they have the ability to fly. But for the first few months, they're grounded on the lake where they want. The press event that we were at was over at Lake Icaria, and they released six swans, all hatched at other zoos, not only Blank Park Zoo, but also Kansas City, Cincinnati, and the New Zoo in Wisconsin. And basically, there's probably about 150 school kids there that they learned about trumpeter swans. Dave Hoffman with the Iowa DNR talked about the trumpeter swan restoration project, and they all got to watch the swans swim out onto the lake.
What are some of the challenges for trumpeter swans today as far as their comeback?
Sure. Well, obviously now they are protected. However, sometimes they still are either accidentally or intentionally killed, and that has been a slight problem. Another problem that they do have is they tend to fly low, and so collisions with power lines are probably this restored population here in Iowa. That's probably one of their biggest challenges, is learning to maneuver around power lines. But on the flip side, with the windmill industry taking off in Iowa, they seem to not be bothered by the windmills. They seem to be able to adapt to that, so that's a good thing. So basically, it's still habitat restoration. Trumpeter swans, if they're going to continue on in the future, we do have to still recognize the importance of wetlands. And if we have wetlands to support a population of trumpeter swans, it means that a lot of species are going to be supported by those wetlands, as well as for us, for people, for our drinking water, we'll have the wetlands as filters.
How many trumpeter swans do you think, 10 years down the road, do you see this project producing?
That's kind of hard to say, because the swans that are released in Iowa don't just stay in Iowa. They have been, through the leg banding and neck banding reporting process, why they've been as far south as Oklahoma and as far north as Canada. The population of trumpeter swans, one thing about swans is when they have a nesting territory, it is fairly large. So it's not like they're not going to nest as densely together as Canada geese do. But I'm not sure what they think the population might be in Iowa. I know that in Minnesota, there is a population of 5,000 that now actually overwinter in one location.
Besides the Blank Park Zoo, where you can see a pair of trumpeter swans, there's some trumpeter swans that live around Des Moines. Do you have any locations where you might be able to spot some?
Well, I know that overwintering over at the Moffett Reservoir, and really any open water along the river potentially could have swans there. What the swans are going to do is stay overnight where there's open water, and they will fly to another location during the day to look for food, and sometimes that is for waste grain in a cornfield. And then they will go back to where they feel the most secure, and that's the open water. And so over at Moffett, just this last winter, there was between 100 and 150 trumpeter swans overwintering there. So when we actually had the Iowa DNR had their swan soiree in January, why they had scopes set up and recommended people go to Moffett to get a good view of a swan.
And when the trumpeter swan is defending its territory, it does something sort of unusual. I've seen it here at Blank Park Zoo. Could you sort of describe that?
Well, I assume you're talking about the unison calling that they do. And it's sort of like if they chase off a competitor, sometimes if they chase off a Canada goose, or I guess maybe you're thinking a person, they will actually call together as a pair. And they're called trumpeter swans for a reason, and that has to do with their vocal abilities. And it is loud and could be akin to a trumpet. But they will usually sort of bond together, and it almost seems like a celebration that they were able to thwart some threat to their nest. And they will unison call, and it can be heard for quite a ways.
Describe the size of a trumpeter swan, I mean, in comparison to maybe a Canada goose.
Okay. Well, it's important to know the trumpeter swan is the largest native bird to North America. So, I mean, it's a big bird. It can weigh up to about 35 pounds, which is actually the biggest swan species, too. A wingspan of 60 to 80 inches, and pure white with a black bill, black feet. For a Canada goose, it probably is at least double and maybe close to three times the size of a Canada goose.
And you described their diet as maybe eating waste of the cornfield or whatever, grain field. Could you describe more of their diet to maybe what we feed them here at the zoo versus what they might eat out in the wild?
Okay. Well, they are wetland birds, and so aquatic vegetation would probably be their main preferred normal diet. And, you know, their long neck actually allows them to be floating and submerge and get really deep the roots of aquatic plants and that sort of thing, and actually get to the bottom of the pond. And so mostly they eat grasses and grains and aquatic vegetation. Here at the zoo, they simply get a complete diet that's meant for waterfowl, as well as we sell a food that the public can feed the fish, and they like that too.
And besides humans, what would be their main predators?
As adults, they probably have very few, but as little fuzzy cygnets, they probably have a lot. And you know, all animals, when they're nesting, they nest on the ground, and they're subject to harassment by predators that might like to eat eat eggs, such as raccoons and coyotes, that sort of thing. So that would probably be the main threat. Then when cygnets are small and they just hatch and they're floating, it actually isn't unheard of that snapping turtles will sometimes take cygnets when they're floating in the shallow parts with their parents, or maybe even large fish.
And then describe how water quality affects them.
You know, the quality of the habitat makes a difference of how productive it is. And so that affects how the swan can raise their cygnets. And so if we have, you know, stagnant, low-quality wetland, it's going to be low-quality habitat for the swans. And so they sort of, if you can support a population of trumpeter swans, it means you have good quality wetlands.
And so, yeah, it's like amphibians, right? If the amphibians are all dead around the water source, then you know maybe the water source is polluted or not very good, right?
That'd be true. I think we probably aren't looking for dead swans, but like we're saying, if a swan can nest, hatch, and raise its cygnets, you know you have a productive wetland.
How many other, are there other types of swans that are native to Iowa, and how many different swans are there?
Yeah, there are several species of swans, and sometimes there's a little bit different information about the number of swans that there actually are. Generally, people think of six different species, but a couple of those have subspecies. But here in Iowa, the trumpeter swan is the biggest, and then we have another white swan called the tundra swan, which doesn't have the same vocalizations, and it's a third smaller than the trumpeter. And they do actually migrate through Iowa, but they don't nest in Iowa, the tundra swan. Another swan, and actually Europe has the counterparts. We have the trumpeter and the tundra. They have, which are similar subspecies of swans, they have the whooper and the bewicks. They're both pure white swans too. A swan that is native to Africa and Asia, Europe, is the mute swan, which is generally what people think of when they think of the ornamental swan with the curved neck. That's a mute swan, another pure white swan. But and the ones that people don't usually know about, and we have here at the zoo, is the Australian black swan, as well as the South American black neck swan, which has a white body and a black neck. And then the final one is kind of an odd swan, and some people don't consider it a true swan species. It's called the Cascaroba, and it's native to South America.
So what makes a swan a swan?
From my perspective, the length of the neck, the fact that it pair bonds for more than one mating season, and most people might say it's white in color, but like I just said, it's not, because there's a pure black swan, a black neck swan. But basically that long neck for probing deep into the water to get the aquatic vegetation and pair bonding.
What do you want people to know about trumpeter swans?
Well, other than the fact that they're awesome birds and we're lucky to have them in Iowa, it is. We already talked about how big they are, but they are big and beautiful. If you can imagine a pure white swan, now that's after its second year. Actually, swan cygnets, trumpeter swans hatch gray and they stay gray for their first year until they molt to a pure white. But they're beautiful and they're big, largest bird in North America. But unfortunately, because they were beautiful, that was part of their demise originally in Iowa, because they were commercially hunted, but it was oftentimes for their feathers, for powder puffs, and for down, and for ornamentation to hats. So there is that. But that is their saving grace. I think when people talk about swans, there is this idea that they bond for life and that if one of the partner dies, the other one is just going to live by itself in mourning. And that's really not true. Generally, they will pair for life if possible. But if a partner is lost, they will acquire another partner. In fact, that's what Ivana did here at the zoo. 2 years ago, we lost her mate of age-related issues. And we brought in a 5-year-old male for her to bond with. And it took them 2 years. But now, actually, as we're speaking, they have a nest with 8 eggs, and so Ivana has taken up another partner. The other thing is there have been some cases of actually divorce in the swan world where a pair will naturally split up, and not because of death, and they will choose a different partner that they think was appropriate.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Kevin Dries from Blank Park Zoo about trumpeter swans. Kevin, talk a little bit about the hatching of eggs.
Okay. Well, we talked how the swan pair bond is strong and can last for the lifetime of the swan. And usually about May, the pair is going to start to establish a nest. Now, the big swans, they don't carry, you know, sticks or anything in their beak. What they do is find a location where there's a lot of natural vegetation and they pull it into a pile. Sometimes it'll be on top of an old muskrat mound. Sometimes it'll just be on the bank of a wetland. And they pull that the aquatic vegetation together. And the female will lay an egg either every day or every other day up to a clutch size, which is how many they would lay at one time, from about 3 to maybe a maximum of 8 eggs. Now, they don't start incubation. They don't sit on the eggs to warm them up until she's laid her whole clutch. So until then, she'll pull vegetation over the eggs so that predators don't see them. But then once she's laid her clutch and she's ready to incubate, she'll actually pluck her own feathers from her abdomen and create what's called a brood patch. And it just thins out the feathers on the abdomen so that she can get good contact, skin contact with the eggs. And once incubation starts, then it takes about 33, 35 days for the embryo to fully develop within the egg. And like almost all birds, the eggs have to be turned. And so multiple times a day, the female and the male takes his turn on incubating the eggs when the female needs to go off and feed and that sort of thing. And she'll actually stand up, turn down, and roll the eggs. And that's a process that, like I said, nearly all birds do so that the embryo doesn't stick to one side of the egg or something like that. It's actually is rotated. And when it's time to hatch, usually the cygnet first hatches internally. There's actually, through incubation, moisture inside the egg is lost and it creates an air cell at the end of the egg. And the little cygnet just internally pips inside. It goes into that air cell. And now for the first time, he's going to breathe air and he can vocalize. And this is the time the egg hasn't even hatched yet, but the parents can communicate with the cygnet and it can talk back. Obviously, this is the start of the process where the chicks are imprinting on their parents, and so that by the time they hatch, they know the parents and that they're going to follow them wherever. After internal pipping and the rest, then they start to hatch through the hard part of the eggshell. And like a lot of birds too, a little hard tip on the end of their bill grows just for this purpose, and it's oftentimes called an egg tooth. And they actually have an enlarged muscle in the back of their neck that helps them kind of peck upwards as they hatch almost a complete circle around the egg in order for the end of the egg to come off. And the little cygnet crawls out, and they'll spend about one or two days just under the mother and kind of get dried off and get fully waterproof while they're waiting for their siblings, you know, the other eggs to hatch. And then usually the parents will leave the nest on about day two or day three, and they may return to the nest to sleep at night after a day of feeding when they're real young. But eventually, that little cygnets will be able to walk up to a mile. I mean, they grow incredibly fast, and actually in only 3 months' time, they'll have reached adult size. Now, they're still gray, but they'll have reached adult size by the time they're 3 months old, and they can fly that, you know, that full adult size can fly that first fall.
So, yeah, I heard once that the timing of all the eggs has to be sort of exact, because if one of them hatches and then it takes 3 weeks for the next one to hatch, that wouldn't work well. So could you talk a little bit about how that works, where the timing of all the eggs, they sort of hatch within a couple of days?
Right. So yeah, there's a couple different strategies that bird species have sort of evolved. And one is that if you're laying the clutch of eggs, like there's a number, yeah, you start incubation on day one. This would be like most parrots. And so if you start incubation on the first one, it's going to hatch sooner than the rest. But there are some advantages to that, in that then the first babies that hatch, actually, if resources are scarce, while then the biggest baby is going to get most of the food, and so at least some of the babies will survive. But most waterfowl species and the trumpeter swans have a different strategy, and that is they don't start incubation until all the eggs are laid, so that they all hatch about the same time. But like we were saying, that communication between mom and the other cygnets encourages them all to hatch about the same time. And amazingly, even though they will have been laid over a 10-day period, because they start incubation all at the same time and the communication, they'll all hatch on the same day.
Well, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the future. What do you see in store for the trumpeter swan in Iowa?
Right. Well, the trumpeter swan still needs the support of the community. Currently, the Iowa DNR helps coordinate the releases, but it really is turned over to the counties. And so, you know, where people live is really who operates this, and the support of people that think the trumpeter swan needs to be part of Iowa's wildlife diversity and what they can see. I think that, you know, as citizens, we need to value the swans, but we also need to value their habitat, which is the wetlands. And you'll be hearing a lot about wetlands in Iowa because it's so important to us.
So what can the average person do to help the trumpeter swan?
Well, I think first it is to really just be aware of what the swan represents, kind of its significance, its return to Iowa. But most of all, and the original sort of battle cry of this restoration program was trumpeting the cause of wetlands, because, you know, for our health as well as Iowa's wildlife, you cannot overstate the importance of wetlands being the filters and the soil stabilization components of that.
Yeah, talk a little bit about wetlands and how that helps us out.
Okay. Well, wetlands, besides acting like a filter, almost like a kidney for all of our lands, because it also helps in flood control. Because you can imagine wetlands can, imagine a marsh. They can hold a vast amount. When it rains, it can hold water and release it slowly. If we don't have wetlands, the runoff goes right to the rivers, and the rivers rise, and that's where we have flooding issues. So wetlands are really, they're safety, not only physically from flooding, but also safety in that they help take out nutrients out of the water and prevent the nutrients from, heading down to the Gulf.
Yeah, and the Gulf sort of has this dead zone, right?
Correct. And in some ways, you know, because Iowa is the productive state that it is, and we do use fertilizers on our lands to grow all these crops, it is something that's very important to Iowa to help control those and help keep the nutrients on the lands where they belong, rather than in the rivers.
So the wetlands would help with that.
Yes, because they slow the runoff, and actually the aquatic vegetation that lives in the wetland helps bind up and use those nutrients rather than letting them go on down the river.
Kevin, talk a little bit about technology and that role in saving animals.
Okay. Well, for the trumpeter swan up until now, it's been mostly kind of manual. We've been physically moving swans around. We've been putting leg bands and neck bands on them and relied on keen-eyed residents to spot those numbers and report it. But we're at Iowa State University, in a project that the Blank Park Zoo is financially supporting. They're going to capture some wild trumpeter swans here in Iowa and put GPS tracking on them and just see how they're using the state and where they're spending their winters. And what they're going to do is actually have a public component where you would be able to log on and see where the swan is today and sort of track his movements, kind of like when the Blank Park Zoo was involved in the Greater Prairie Chicken Restoration. Some of the birds had GPS tracking, so we could just see, get a better idea of how swans use the state.
Is there anything else you want to add?
No, I think just that trumpeter swans are cool. People need to recognize the gift that bringing the swan back to Iowa is, and when you see your first flying wild swan, I think you'll understand what I mean.
Well, Kevin, thanks for joining us today. Again, Blank Park Zoo is open year-round and open 7 days a week during the summer. You can learn all about the zoo, such as the animals, special events, and more at blankparkzoo.com. Make sure you check out the zoo's YouTube channel, where there's lots of fun video, including video of trumpeter swans. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Please make sure you join us again for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.